Samuel Caruso v. District Court, case number 82362. Mr. Hamilton, are you ready for the petitioner?
I am, Your Honor.
And Justices, may I please reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Justices, and it is great to be here. Ryan Hamilton, bar number 11587, on behalf of Petitioner Samuel Josiah Caruso. Justices, a defendant prosecuted by a legislator prosecutor is forced to play an unfair game. The legislator prosecutor gets to write the rules of the game, and then the legislator prosecutor gets to play the game with an unfair advantage, the most unfair advantage of all. The people who decide who wins the game are her constituents. Of course, the stakes in this game, this so-called game, could not be higher. The defendants are faced with losing their liberty, sometimes for the rest of their lives. A prosecutor-legislator has power over jurors in a real way. She not only represents the state of Nevada in the prosecution, she also represents members of the jury as a legislator on issues that touch every aspect of their lives. The defendant then has not one, but two branches of government putting their weight behind the prosecution. Where a legislator is also a prosecutor, the legislative branch impinges on the executive branch's ability to enforce the law in an impartial and constitutional manner. Not only does this deeply unfair situation violate Nevada's express separation of powers, it deeply erodes the public trust in the justice system. And it's, of course, this public trust, bless you,
thank you,
on which the system depends for its very effectiveness.
Mr. Hamilton, I know you've proceeded forward with what is a merits argument on your petition, but there are at least two procedural problems I'd like you to address.
Absolutely, Judge.
Ordinarily, especially in a criminal case where adjudication has not been determined, there is an adequate remedy at law, and I don't know that it has been sufficiently explained to this court in the briefings or otherwise why we should entertain this writ now. And secondly, and perhaps equally important, issues that raise questions about incompatibility of persons serving in competing branches have been previously identified by this court as requiring declaratory relief actions. In both instances, your current petition would seem out of order. I wonder if you could please address that.
Yes, Justice. The question before the court is a question of first impression that has statewide public importance. Your Honor, this court has routinely taken up matters of first impression of statewide public importance in the past on writs of mandamus or alternatively a writ of prohibition. Your Honor, in listening to this court's oral argument on the same issue, September 9, in the Molin and Plumlee case, which also involves the separation of powers, it was clear that all parties before the court were asking the court to issue a merits decision because the impact of the court's ruling on this issue is certain to have wide-reaching ramifications. So, Your Honor, from a both from a precedential standpoint and from a judicial economy standpoint, I believe all parties are requesting that the court issue a merits decision.
Well, I know that was asked in that previous oral argument, as you mentioned, That doesn't mean that the court should do so and abandon its prior precedent on the consideration of these kinds of writs. We get these kinds of requests all the time, but they become potentially advisory. One of the issues I expressed concern about in the Plumlee argument is that the prosecutor involved wasn't even a party. They're not a party here either. Ordinarily, as we said in Heller and some other cases, the factual record should be developed. And certainly the allegedly offending individual who is the subject of the incompatibility claim should have an opportunity to speak.
Your Honor, I think that those are certainly fair points. Our position on that is that the factual record needs no further development. It's clear that the legislator at issue was also serving as a prosecutor at the very same time, concurrently, that she when she brought this prosecution against the defendant. At this point, Your Honor, it is our position that it is ripe for a determination on the merits. It is not necessary for an extensive factual record. We have the very basic facts that come into play, Your Honor. She's serving two core functions in two different departments at the very same time, and doing so at a great disadvantage to my client.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes, Judge.
If I may, just briefly, even if we accepted your argument on the merits, how would that entitle your client to relief?
Thank you, Justice. That's a great question. Justice, in Del Papa v. Stephan, this court held that where the separation of powers were violated in that case, it was not only unconstitutional, but constituted a legal nullity. Your Honor, it would be very strange if the separation of powers were violated in this case, a constitutional bedrock principle that this court time and again has emphasized as perhaps the single most important principle guaranteeing the liberty of the defendant and there be no remedy available. So, Your Honor, it's our position that it would be required upon a finding that the separation of powers have been violated in this instance, that the case be dismissed and that the prosecution would have to start fresh without the legislator who is offending the separation of powers.
Well, that's the remedy you want, certainly. Why
absolutely.
Would you be entitled to that remedy? And also, why is a local officer, or a county prosecutor, even subject to the separation of powers argument at all?
She is subject to the separation of powers because she effectively, per statute, stands in the shoes. She has all the same powers as the elected district attorney. She engages in charging decisions. She engages in prosecutorial investigation. She makes sentencing recommendations. And per Nevada statute, she does all of those things that the elected district attorney can do, with the exception of having policymaking authority.
Per statute, the elected cannot serve in both roles. Is there any authority you can cite to? Because the Constitution says state government. It doesn't say local government. It's based on California's Constitution, who's interpreted it in the way, certainly, that that the respondent is presenting here today. So how do you distinguish that?
Yes. Judge, I would point to this court's decision in County of Washoe. And in County of Washoe, the court may recall, that was a situation in which a prosecutorial veto over a court's assignment to the Veterans Court program, wherein the statute said that a judge could sentence, could assign a defendant to the Veterans Court program so long as the prosecuting attorney stipulated. And that particular statute was held to be violative of the separation of powers based on that. And it drew no distinction between the state government nor the local government. Moreover, this court in that very decision went on to explain that any prosecutorial power over the judiciary was offensive to the separation of powers. So, Your Honor, I would suggest that that right there is support for the position.
Let me ask you, why wouldn't this be an incompatibility as opposed to separation of powers under dual service?
It's so there's an incompatibility provision in the Nevada Constitution, and the Nevada Constitution also makes it non-justiciable for the justices to review the qualifications of a legislator. But the same does not apply to the qualifications or problems with an executive branch employee. And so for that, we believe that it is it's a separation of powers problem, Justice.
So going back to Justice Hardesty's other question.
Yes.
The appropriate avenue, is that the distinction you're making why this shouldn't be a deck relief action?
It is. It is, Justice. And, you know, this is candidly, the reason that a mandamus action was sought here, because that was the very action that was taken in the Del Papa versus Steppen. And I do think it would be rather unfair to require the defendant to maintain a declaratory relief action when not one but two state branches of government are putting their weight behind his prosecution.
What authority, if any, have you cited to us that would justify dismissing sexual assault charges against your client based on one of the two prosecutors in the case allegedly violating separation of powers? How does that follow one from the other?
It follows from this court's time and again emphasizing that the separation of powers is a bedrock principle that this court and the state are required to follow. And for the very reason, Justice, that my client is facing a situation where jurors will be potentially constituents of the prosecutor. And
but how does that work? But why is dismissal of the case the remedy? You explicitly have disavowed a request for disqualification of that particular prosecutor.
Because it is such a severe action based on this court's own precedents, this court has time and again emphasized the unique importance of the separation of powers. And candidly, this is a matter of first impression. There is not a lot of case law on this particular point. But we believe that that is the appropriate remedy given the severity of the situation at issue. Justices, I see that I'm short on time. With that, I would submit for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chin.
Good afternoon. Alexander Chen on behalf of the state of Nevada, respondent in this matter, bar number 10539. May it please the court. I do want to begin with the jurisdictional defect that we have here. I know that the court has somewhat touched on the fact that this is a petition for writ of mandamus, and I believe in Heller versus Legislature, this court gave pretty explicit instructions in terms of how an individual who would be affected should raise a challenge to a person who should not be holding the office in which they have. I believe that the court said that it should be either a quo warranto action or alternatively for declaratory relief. I know that that did not happen in this case, but as the respondent and being asked to respond, we did respond to the underlying allegations.
Let me ask you a question about that, Mr. Chin, because we didn't really get into it with Mr. Hamilton, but assuming even in this case that he was hired by his client, Most criminal defendants are indigent. So how is it accomplish anything fair to them to require them to then have to somehow come up with money to hire an attorney to pursue a declaratory relief action, as opposed to allowing their criminal representatives to pursue that in the court in which they're being prosecuted by the allegedly separation of powers violating attorney?
I understand, Justice Herndon. And what I would say to that is the rules, I suppose, are the rules. I understand that it would require somebody else to file that type of action, if not for the private attorney or a public defender or a court-appointed attorney. But the fact of the matter is, if we were to take that principle and all of a sudden put a right on it to every single indigent defendant, that they have a right not just to challenge and to protect against the criminal case, but to also challenge all other things related to it, I think that would be well past where Gideon meant to provide qualified representation for defendants.
Do you think it would change if the challenge in district court, because as I understand it, the challenge in district court is essentially alleging that the harm has already occurred. The allegedly violating prosecutor has already prosecuted through justice court, therefore infecting what took place there, any offers that may or may not have been made, the presentation of evidence, et cetera. So would it change in district court if the motion was simply to disqualify a prosecutor versus dismissing the case?
I think it would, Justice Herndon, because there are motions to disqualify attorneys that are filed, whether it's D.A. Wolfson in the past, Zoghib was one of those cases, or other cases where an individual has sought to disqualify an attorney. That's not an uncommon type of action. Now, obviously, I understand that's not the exact same thing of what we're talking about here, but those motions are filed. I know that that wasn't necessarily the motion that was filed by opposing counsel in this case. But when speaking about what this court said in Heller, I do want to somewhat touch on the fact that here, as the state of Nevada, we know what the Constitution says, and we can't deny what the words used in the Constitution are. I know in the Plumlee matter, we had discussions about powers, about what persons it refers to, and what functions it refers to. But I do want to point out that this is not just the opinion of my office or of myself or the state of Nevada. When Heller was decided and when Amici submitted various briefs ranging from the ACLU, Legislative Council Bureau, the Police Protective, Las Vegas Police Protective Association, institutes of higher education and unions, they all interpreted the Nevada Constitution in the way that myself and the state of Nevada are interpreting it in this particular case. They were all referring to the powers being to that of the public officer. They were referring to the functions being sovereign functions delegated to that. So while I understand that the plain language does say that these are, it says no persons, it's still our position that the persons referred to are those that actually hold the sovereign functions of government. And that was from a various group of people, because when Heller was decided, and when Heller was submitted, I should say, to this court, it was under the same type of petition for writ of mandamus that we have here. That was the action that Senator, Secretary of State Heller chose to use. And because no one at that time before the court came out with this decision was certain whether or not this court was actually going to reach that ultimate issue, the briefs that were submitted all had to do with this issue of separation of powers, and they all came to the same conclusion regarding who the separation of powers actually applies to.
Mr. Chen?
Yes.
Is it your position that it applies to local governments?
There are certainly powers that do. I think the Washoe versus Second Judicial District, that one where the district attorney's office had a veto over the over the judicial powers to implement a program, I think that would be an example that the powers must apply in certain instances. But what we're talking about here, Justice Stiglitz, are the persons that applies to. And the persons would be the office of the district attorney or the district attorney himself.
But you're asking us to say the Constitution doesn't mean what it says when it uses the word persons?
No, I think we do want you to use what it says, but also in the context of which it said. When this court first started addressing these issues of separation of powers in cases like Kendall versus Cole back, I believe, in 1915, it was referring to these type of things of sovereign functions of government and the person who holds those powers. And it gave a long list of individuals who didn't qualify under that particular definition. For instance, I believe there was a guard at a jail cited to saying that they didn't hold this executive power. Now, a guard at a jail would be part of most likely the executive branch or someone working within the function to maintain that institution. But even in cases like that, they said that it wasn't referring to simply every person and every function. It was referring to the public officers, and that there was a distinction between public officers and the individuals.
But to be clear, you do concede that the district attorney's office or the district attorney as an elected official does exercise powers appertaining to the executive branch.
Yes, the district attorney does hold that power, Justice Pickering, and that's our position.
And that's your concession on that point?
I believe that we do exercise executive powers when we're in court. However, the sovereign function of that power is not vested in myself or in Deputy District Attorney
Scheibel. Your point is it doesn't go to the deputies, but certainly it is executive branch powers that are related to the function of the executive branch when
similar,
you charge
somebody. Yes, Justice Pickering, and similar to cases like Kendall where you had both Kendall and I believe it was Matthews, where you had these issues of people serving executive functions, whether it's head of the driver's license division or whether it's the head of the exposition for, I believe, the World Fair. Those were executive functions. They carried with them executive powers. However, the separation of powers provision didn't apply because they were not the persons that were vested with the sovereign. In each of those cases, they had to report to an individual who did have the sovereign power. And that's
the problem I have with your argument is it doesn't track the language of our constitutional provision because the prohibition is stated that no persons charged with the exercise of powers properly belonging to one of these departments, so that would be the legislators, let's use them as an example. They're the no persons, shall exercise any functions appertaining to either of the others, so meaning the other two branches. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see in that the elected official exception that you're, or limitation, not exception, limitation that you're positing.
Yes, and I think that's why this court in its previous cases regarding separation of powers issues and what persons is involved and what a public officer is considered, I think they touch on that in other cases. Because, again, when we're talking about the executive branch, which has multiple agencies that it operates throughout this entire state, you have instances where this court has determined that the constitutional provisions simply don't apply to them because of the type of, because of who's in question. When this court was, took up the question of whether a person who works for the courts could bring an action, when this court has taken up the position of whether the president of a university who exercises millions of dollars in their budget, who has complete control over discipline and other executive matters, and yet this court still found, no, the constitutional provisions don't apply because it's only referring to the public officers, not to the individuals. So, yes.
I'm sorry, did you finish your answer to Justice Pickering?
I was simply going to say, so despite the fact that it says no persons, and I understand and can respect a reading like that, I do believe that this court has further interpreted those words.
But it also says state government. I mean, we're talking about two different trees.
Yes.
Because the local prosecutors are just that. That's local government. That's not state government. How do we expand this to state? How are we able to put those two together? Or is it your position that it does not apply to local government, except where it's otherwise by statute, like the principal, like Steve Wolfson, for instance?
Yes. And I know that this court has somewhat determined or has examined some of these principles in other cases. And again, I think that's where the past cases regarding what not only persons, but what those powers are and what the functions mean are relevant to look at. Because as I mentioned, I'm not here to say that being a prosecutor doesn't exercise some type of executive type of function. Because I think that it does, and clearly this court did when it decided that our office, for instance, couldn't intervene in what the judiciary was going to do.
Mr. Chen, I'm sorry to interrupt that.
Yes.
Sort of similar to what Justice Stiglitz is asking about. I assume you're familiar with and have read then-Attorney General Sandoval's opinion.
Yes.
About this matter, which covered a lot of the things we're talking about today. And one of his conclusions in that opinion was that this particular provision, Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution, would not apply to local government employees. So can you address your views on that?
Sure. So especially when it comes to employees, Justice Kadish, I would absolutely say that it would apply regardless, that the separation of powers wouldn't be applicable to employees. But when it comes to a local government, and I'm familiar with that decision, or with his opinion, I should say, I would say that this court has addressed it in certain cases. I know in Lane versus Second Judicial District, they made a comment regarding local governments not being subject to the separation of powers. And I believe in contested Mallory, where the constitutional provisions regarding the term limits of a district attorney didn't apply. So I know that this court has certainly found precedents that local governments don't necessarily apply. I think certainly this court could apply that, but even if you weren't to take that view and you were to say, well, prosecutors are in the courtroom prosecuting cases, serving some type of executive function, I still would say that those individuals aren't exercising the sovereign functions of government that the Constitution is referring to.
But it sounds like, Mr. Chen, that you're conceding that local prosecutors carry out and enforce the laws of the state of Nevada.
We do.
The individuals, not just the elected prosecutors.
Yes.
And obviously in Del Papa, that's how we defined executive power for purposes of a separation of powers argument. So it kind of stands to reason that local prosecutors, and we discussed this, I know you'll recall in Plumlee, are the ones in court carrying out and enforcing the laws, not the elected prosecutors. And every case you file is state of Nevada versus an individual. And you go to court and you tell the jurors, I'm here on behalf of the state of Nevada, the people in the state of Nevada, not I'm here on behalf of Clark County or the people of Clark County. You go to court on behalf of the state of Nevada. So how can you disavow that local prosecutors work on behalf of the state enforcing the state's laws?
I don't believe I've disavowed it. I think I was citing to precedent that this court has found it doesn't necessarily apply to local governments. But what I would say to that, Justice Herndon, is that the district attorneys that do that obviously serve a function do so at the will of our elected leader. Our elected leader could be the one who does appear in court. Certainly the statutory provisions that the legislature has laid out has given that elected DA a mechanism to hire people such as myself or other DAs like Ms. Scheibel to carry cases on their behalf. However, they don't carry the official sovereign function or the power to make policy decisions on behalf of the office, and I think that's what the critical distinction is. So yes, they're serving a function, but I don't believe that they're serving the function to which the Constitution is referring to when they serve as a deputy.
Mr. Chen, I'm sorry, but could you quickly address if this court were to disagree and think there was a separation of powers violation, how would you address the remedy being sought here?
Well, I know that you pointed out that there were two deputies on this particular case, one of which had nothing to do, obviously, with the legislature. So I don't think that dismissal is a proper remedy. If it comes down to a conflict or disqualification, as Justice Herndon had previously mentioned, perhaps that would be it. But I would like to just conclude by saying, if I may, Justice Hardesty,
go ahead,
that with all of the case law regarding this issues and with all of the arguments that have been made, I hope that it's not just the district attorney's office serving one type of very special executive function that this court determines are the only ones that would be violative of the separation of powers clause despite all the other cases. And with that, I would conclude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Chen? Okay, thank you, Mr. Chen. Mr. Hamilton, we'll add a minute to your time.
Thank you, Justices. The state is asking you to make a distinction, their distinction between public officers and public employees that is nowhere in the text of Article 3, Section 1. And I would also like to point out that there's to the justices that in Whitehead 3, 110 Nevada 874, it really undercuts the state's position that only the elected officials can run into separation of powers problems. In that case, as the court may recall, involved an executive branch member prosecuting a judge before the Commission on the Nevada Judicial Discipline Committee. The court found that it violated the separation of powers, and not only that, the court expressly disapproved not only of the elected attorney general participating in the Judicial Commission hearings, but also of the unelected staff from the attorney general's office. So in that case, the court quite expressly indicated that the separation of powers does apply to unelected.
Yeah, but the attorney general's office is a direct line to the executive. I mean, that is an executive, that is a state executive function. That is distinguishable from a local prosecutor, it would seem. No?
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with that, given that, again, as noted, the local prosecutors do represent the state of Nevada, and they're charged with enormous prosecutorial power and discretion on behalf of the state.
Let me ask you, what authority does the state executive, the governor of the state of Nevada, have over a local prosecutor's office?
Your Honor, I think as a practical matter, an enormous amount. It may not be.
Do they hire, fire, make charging decisions, approve charging decisions? Do they go to court? What power does the governor of the state of Nevada, the state executive, have over a local prosecutor's office?
Your Honor, candidly, I don't know, having never worked in a prosecutor's office. What I would say is that the definition that this court has laid out of executive power is squarely what the prosecutors are doing in the local courts every day.
So, Mr. Hamilton, I'd like to ask an extension of the issue that Justice Stiglitz has been raising with you. As you know, this court has referred to separation of powers doctrine in the context of the city of Sparks, Young versus the Board of County Commissioners, State versus Second Judicial District Court, Hearn, and the County of Washoe. If this court were to determine that the separation of powers doctrine in our Constitution is limited to state officers or state government only, would that decision undermine all of the jurisprudence I've just mentioned? And if not, why not?
I certainly believe that it would undermine those decisions, Justice Hardesty. Those decisions make no distinction between public officials and public employees. And moreover, they talk about the exercise of executive power in the manner in which local prosecutors are exercising it every single day on behalf of the state.
Chief, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Thank you. I want to understand what remedy. I want to return to that. And first, what is the current status of this case? It has not proceeded to trial during the pendency of this petition. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So it's pending trial in district court?
That is correct.
And you want dismissal of the claim, but you would surely acknowledge the dismissal would be without prejudice. Is that right?
I do. I would also say that I believe that the dismissal would also require that evidence gathered pursuant to any evidence obtained pursuant to this violation of separation of powers should be thrown out as well.
Have you identified any such evidence?
It's unclear at this point. We would need further proceedings in the district court on that very issue.
So that would require factual development then?
It would.
But to continue on this, has the statute of limitations on these offenses run?
They have not.
And are you seeking a disqualification that would be office-wide? In other words, the entire Clark County DA's office would be out of this case?
I think that would be appropriate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Hamilton? All right. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments today. This case will stand.